Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Love Wins Podcast Show. My name is Nick the Greek. I am still your host, and we are still in our usual location, which is Santa Cruz, California. Today is August 24th, 2022. It is Wednesday. The time is 2:49 p.m. And here in Santa Cruz, I must say, ladies and gentlemen, it is a beautiful day. Beautiful sun, beautiful blue skies. It's been a nice day. I haven't witnessed too much, actually at all, really, today, surprisingly, negative energy, which is awesome. I'm here with a good friend of mine, which I'd like to introduce to the show. My good friend, Mr. Keith McHenry, is on the show with me today. Hello, Mr. Keith.
Thank you, Nick, so much.
Absolutely, absolutely. We really are very grateful for you coming on the show today. As many of you have been keeping up with this show, we have a little bit of a following, I've noticed, recently, which is the reason why we're doing another show already. So with that being said, if you've been keeping up, you already know that we discuss worldwide matters on this show on a daily basis, and we try to come up with solutions for them, for us as a whole, all of us together, right? We came up with some goals that we wanted to reach with this show, which I'm not going to mention today, because there is something that has entered my, I don't want to say my world, because it's our world, right? That is a worldwide matter, and we're going to discuss today. So the reason why my friend Keith McHenry came to the show today, I asked him to because he told me something about his life, and it really bothered me, which is that my friend Keith McHenry was recently incarcerated for a very long time because he was feeding people. And I want Mr. Keith McHenry to explain, you know, a little bit about the situation. But before he does, I just want to let it be known that there is no catch to what we're talking about here. There's no, like, something else happened and then it brought this on. That's not what happened here. He simply was literally incarcerated for feeding people, which is, as I'm sure most logical adults would agree, insane. So that's why I brought my friend Keith McHenry to the show today, because that cannot happen anymore. This is literally a worldwide matter. This is a serious worldwide matter. Somebody feeding people and going to jail is insane. I can't even picture the faces of the police officers that were arresting you. I'm sorry I'm talking so much, you know, Keith, but I just still can't believe it. I'm still processing this situation, you know. So yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit more about how this happened, so that way the audience knows that this really did happen, you know, the way we're saying it did. So
cool. Well, I'm going to start out by saying that me and seven other friends of mine were, like, I was just turned 22 years old. We started Food Not Bombs, which was the street theater, really, with food. So we did a bake sale to buy a bomber, and then we did a soup line outside of a stockholders meeting of the Bank of Boston.
Wow.
And that's how we got started, and that's in 1980. And so in Boston, we did this food on the streets all the time, and we were never in any trouble with any city officials or any cops or anything. So for 8 years I did that.
Wow.
And then I moved to San Francisco.
Just simply fed people.
Yeah.
I had a
banner that said Food Not Bombs.
That is awesome.
Our whole point of Food Not Bombs, uh-huh, I was just reflecting on this, like, yesterday, the day before, is that really, you know, my job is to help create a world where no one is really forced to stand in line to eat at a soup kitchen because they are looking for food, or that anybody even really has to live outside in the streets because they don't have adequate housing.
What a good man. What a good man to have on this planet. Instead of being grateful that we have such people still left on this planet, we incarcerate them. I cannot believe this. Like, seriously, Keith, I'm going to take it upon myself, if I have to, like, make sure that this doesn't happen again. Because you being incarcerated is seriously a worldwide matter. I have watched this man myself feed over, like, 100 people or 50 people twice a day each, including myself, for the past, what, 2-3 years now. So I mean, seriously, like, as soon as I heard that this happened, I told him I have a podcast. I said, Keith, I want you to come on the show because we can't allow this to happen again, ladies and gentlemen. This is serious stuff.
So, yeah, to continue with the story,
please, I
moved to San Francisco, and I set up a table at the entrance to to Golden Gate Park at Haight and Stanion. And so I had one table with flyers on it, and one table with all the food, and then we had these carts that we put like produce on, like grocery totes,
okay,
and so milk crates and things. And so we did that every Monday because there was no food in the Haight-Ashbury for people living in the park or on the streets in the Haight. This is would be in 88.
Gotcha.
March of 88.
Okay.
So then this man came by and asked me if I had a permit. And I said, well, I never really
to
had
give away free food.
Yeah, I said, I never really had a permit or anything like that. I don't know. We had like a street performance permit in Cambridge, but we did it once, and it was just our mailbox or phone number so I could return our equipment. So
gotcha.
Then, anyway, so he said, oh, you could write a letter to this guy, Peter Ash, at the Recreation Parks Department over there, and they'll give you a permit.
Okay.
And he seemed like a cool, hip guy.
So did you write the letter?
So I did that.
Okay.
On the
And you got the permit?
No. So what happened was, every week I would go to try to find out why we're not getting any response, and they would never know. And then I had a ruptured appendix, and I spent a week in the hospital. And then when I was the hospital right across from Haight and Stanyan. I went to, there was already seemed to be this energy that something might go wrong at the meal because the police were bothering our drivers and stuff.
Wow.
And neighborhood people were calling me saying, we think that this take back, it was like Take Back Santa Cruz, but it was Coal Valley Improvement Association, was going to go after you, and so be prepared.
To do what?
For serving food at the corner of Haight and Stanyan.
But what were they going to do to you?
Well, we didn't know.
Okay.
So, but just something could happen. So I went down there, and on August 15th, 1988, about 45 riot police in all came out of the woods and arrested 9 people, arresting me first.
What?
And they said that we were serving food without a permit. So then,
and they took you to jail?
Yeah.
And that was the time that you spent 500 days?
No. So just what ends up happening is I get arrested a few times in 88, a few times in... For giving out food in 89. So then we start, in 89, we start a program called Risk Arrest One Day a Month with Food Not Bombs. Because we're doing it every day at that point. Because
Risk Arrest?
Yeah, Risk Arrest with... One day a month with Food Not Bombs. So what we did was we would serve. So the first 300 arrests were for not having a permit.
Okay.
And then they made a court order against serving food without a permit, and they deleted the permit process, and they started arresting us for felony conspiracy.
To do
so,
what?
To feed people without a permit in violation of a court order.
Saying that it was a conspiracy.
Yep. So that meant you had to spend the night in jail. So then that meant we started this program so we would survive called Risk Arrest One Day a Month with Food Not Bombs. And we get church groups and student organizations and stuff like that to commit to one day. And they would help us cook, and then they would go out and we would send in first like buckets of with very little food in it.
What?
And then we would hand out that food until those people got arrested. And then we would have another group of 2 or 3 people come with a little bit more food. They would hand it out, and they would get arrested. And then it seemed like every time when we would then bring in all the food, and we'd feed everybody that came, just like we do today here. And it would and the cops would come back on the third time. They just would make the first 2 waves of arrests. And that went on. There was a total of 1,000 arrests in all of everybody for serving
Jesus,
food.
Jesus, man, that was insane.
And then they were also extremely... So I ended up getting 47 counts of felony conspiracy to serve food in violation of a court order. Also on August 22nd of 88, there was an arrest of, I think, about 24 people. And that day, the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force was there. And on the 29th of August of that year, 88, they wrote a memo to the FBI field office saying we were a credible national security threat.
Feeding people.
Yeah. With the name Food Not Bombs. The thing that freaked them out was Food Not Bombs. But that's why we use the name. We want... We give all this money to weapons and let people live in the streets. It's insane. We can house and feed everyone, and we choose not to, because we choose to instead make bombs and launch bombs and do all that. And that just is insane.
I'm sorry, Keith. Yeah. I'm sorry that you had to go through this, man.
So I ended up a total...
And he's still feeding people today. He's still feeding people today. This man is an angel on our land today, ladies and gentlemen. And we need to take this matter seriously, because it's very serious, as I'm sure most logical adults would agree with this statement. So, I'm sorry, what were you going to say, Keith?
Yeah, so the... Food Not Bombs is a worldwide movement now. So I eventually faced 25 to life in prison on the California Three Strikes Law. I got framed by the mayor's film commissioner, and then I was framed by...
Where?
In San Francisco City Hall.
Wow.
And, they want us to move. So. And so in San Francisco City Hall, by a man by the name of Nick Rommel.
Uh-huh.
And he was friends with the mayor at the time. And they had this plot, and it was right after the Three Strikes what law came about. So then that was a problem there. And then the next thing was that Amnesty International declared anyone in Food Not Bombs a prisoner of conscience if we were convicted. And we got this fax from London saying that. So we then decided we would... So I was handing that out to the border supervisors, and one of her, Barbara Kaufman's aide, slammed a door on me and a friend, and I put my hand out to stop the door from hitting my friend, and I cut my hand, and I got charged with assault with a deadly weapon.
What?
And then my third strike was, we set up, for the literature and stuff and the food, we would set out milk crates that we borrowed from this restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And then in doing that, we would end up, taking them back to the restaurant every night.
Okay.
But that way, because the cops were taking our tables every day and it was too expensive. And the tables in those days were really big, heavy wooden tables.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just went with that. And I got charged with stealing 24 Berkeley Farms dairy milk crates, which was related to an alleged theft of a beeper in the first attack by Nick Rommel in a phone booth. Yeah, so that's how I got my three strikes. And then in 1994, I was picked up by the police, I believe. I'm not sure totally who they were, but they would, but they're related to the police, because what they would do is they would take me into this basement, what turned out to be 850 Bryant Street, the headquarters.
Uh-huh.
They'd take me upstairs to a room that I later learned was, I think, 136, something like that. And it was a double high room.
Yeah.
And they would tear my clothes off and throw me on the ground. And they would lift me by my arms and legs, kicking and screaming at me.
Are you kidding
me? In the dark. Yeah. And then they would, and it would rip my ligaments and tendons. And,
what?
And then they would lift me into a stress position cage. It's a metal cage.
So they weren't cops?
They could have been cops. They might have been FBI. They might have been some, who knows
what. Okay.
And then they put me into the, and I would have, it was called a stress position cage, although I found that out from an Iraqi vet years later.
Uh-huh.
And it, I couldn't stretch out my legs for like 3 days. And it made my legs and my arms hurt like crazy. It was like a total freaking drag.
And where were they finding you at? They were kidnapping you?
Yeah, I was driving down the, Grove or something like that towards my house in the Richmond District in San Francisco,
uh-huh.
and cops would pull me over.
So they did and pull out blue sirens, blue and red lights, I mean?
It was plainclothes cars, but then a paddy wagon got me and put me in the paddy wagon. But then so a lot of cops were involved. I also could have been more other people, like FBI and stuff
Holy
involved.
Shit,
that's basically
dude.
The point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I got what
you're saying. So that, they did that to me 3 times. And the reason I know it's room 136, 850
uh-huh.
Bryant Street, is because when they let me out, they just handed me my pants. No wallet, no shoes, no socks, no nothing like that.
They kept all your other stuff except your pants.
Yeah, and then they just threw me out into the street.
So you can see the address.
Yeah, because I've been there. I mean, that's police headquarters, so I knew where that was. So
San Francisco.
In San Francisco, 850 Bryan Street.
Holy shit.
So that, that happened, and eventually I pled guilty to assault, battery, strong arm robbery because they were bringing riot police to my court appearances, and I didn't feel that I would get a fair trial. To intimidate the jury and stuff, right?
What?
Yeah, they had metal detectors. They were pretending like I was a hardcore terrorist, and all I was doing was collecting food that couldn't be sold, making it into vegan meals that I was sharing on the streets every day to probably 100 to 150 homeless people, maybe more, every day, plus giving out all kinds of produce and bagels and stuff. And I had a literature table each time where I would just have flyers about, you know, where you could get other services, why we were against war, you know, when the next protest was going to be.
Yes.
And then we had a sign that I made on linoleum or something like that, press board, that said Food Not Bombs with the logo on it. And so I did that. And that's what we did, and that's all we did was that. And we weren't advocating for overthrowing the government, or we were only advocating that money be diverted from military spending towards education, healthcare, and other social services.
Yes.
And what I saw on C-SPAN TV one time, a story. Lecture by two guys, and mainly it was this one guy, but somebody introduced him, and I don't know really who they were, although I got the impression from what they were saying that they were with the U.S. State Department, and they were the main person was talking about who's more dangerous, Al-Qaeda or the people that share vegan meals in the parks.
Are you kidding me?
And by this time, there's maybe like 400 or 500 groups worldwide. And so he, this is in April of 2009.
Food Not Bombs groups?
Yeah, that's in April of 2009.
Wow.
And so then it was, what ended up, so I saw that two times, but I never got the details of who was actually speaking. Or anything, so I can't find a copy of it, but I would love to. So in the end, they said that the people that shared the vegan meals were more dangerous than Al-Qaeda, that Al-Qaeda would probably not last more than 20 more years, but that Food Not Bombs would probably go on for another, or they didn't call it Food Not Bombs in the thing, would go, the vegan meals would go on for another 30 because their people are friendly, and as a result, it could lead to for the American people to think that their money should be diverted from military spending towards education, healthcare, and other social services, and that therefore there would not be enough money for the military, and that would be a greater national security threat than Al-Qaeda. So that is why we've been targeted by the FBI. But my response, so I've written three books. First one is called Food Not Bombs, How to Feed the Hungry and Build Community. It's out of print. I have the next one is Hungry for Peace, and then I have The Anarchist Cookbook. And I wrote I wrote these books to show people of any age, but really young people, how they can organize and change society. And the model of Food Not Bombs is very straightforward, and it's reproducible, and many people say it transforms their life.
Yes.
And so we have three principles: that the food is always vegan or vegetarian, and free to anyone, rich or poor, drunk or sober.
Yes.
I have to say, in the pandemic, there's been chaos, and what we make is vegan, but we get donated meat. That's become a thing that's happened in this crisis. Then the second one is that there's no president, director, headquarters, or anything like that, that it's a non-hierarchical movement when every group is autonomous and they make decisions involving both the unhoused and the everybody, you know, there's no limitations.
Yes.
To make decisions about that organization's direction using a process of consensus. So there's no leadership hierarchy or anything like that within the group or within the movement. So that, you know, and that therefore, like, as by definition, I'm a co-founder, but I have no more power. Although, you know, I know a lot about what's going on. I wrote these books, and it tells you about how to do this in those books. Then the third thing is that we're not a charity, but that we're dedicated to taking nonviolent direct action to change society so that no one has to eat at a soup kitchen or live in the streets. Awesome. And so then I have a flyer called 7 Steps to Starting a Food Not Bombs. So it becomes very easy to do. And it's also the books are essentially show you how to do that as well.
Yes, sir.
And so now there's probably about 50,000 Food Not Bombs volunteers worldwide.
Wow. 50,000.
Yeah. And you could, we start out as a street theater group, and with that atmosphere, you could probably tell eating here, because we have the signs, we have, you know, there's like a festive atmosphere that we try to create at
Absolutely,
the meal.
Yeah.
Although, as you know, like yesterday, Tony was kind of out there, so things were not as comfortable as it could be.
That happens.
But that's the other thing, is that we are really about no class distinction. You know that no one is better or worse than anybody else. We're all in this together. We also call it mutual aid. And fortunately, because of the pandemic, Maine society collapsed in the areas of providing food for homeless people, and we were able to do that the entire. Now it's 900 days on August 31st. When the city and the county and the federal government were unable to help, really. And it was basically for us that figured out all the logistics. And that same thing that you saw here, Nick,
yes,
it happened in similar ways all over the world through the entire pandemic. Because governments just, like, decided that they weren't going to provide to people living outside. And so, like, in Asia, everywhere, like South Africa, Food Not Bombs was the food that was there. I think European countries did better, but at handling, getting food to people, but much of the world was not that way. And Food Not Bombs, like we did here, where the indoor St. Francis and I think shut down completely, as did Meals on Wheels for a while. So, you know, that's the basic idea of Food Not Bombs, is that we're going to change society by just changing society.
Yes.
And that we're going to do it in a joyous, celebratory way.
Absolutely.
And anybody can connect with us at foodnotbombs.net.
Yep.
And if you're in the United States or Mexico and Canada, I think you can call toll-free the 1-800-884-1136.
There it is. Man, oh man, thank you so much, Keith, for sharing your story with us today. Seriously, like, I got emotional a couple of times. I know you heard me.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard for me to hide it. Sorry. I don't even know what... there's nothing else I can say more than what... Everything that Mr. Keith McHenry just said is something that we all should know, because we're all a part of this. We're all a part of this planet, and we're all together, you know, connected through energy. And it's only right for these children that are going to be the future of this planet that this energy moves in the most positive manner possible, as I always say on the show. And you know, we might have negative incidents from here to there, but you know what? We got to focus on the positive more, because we are a progressive species, right? So we want these kids to progress, to be better, and to do better for themselves and for the other kids that they, you know, live around, and the other that are going to be the adults of this country. Of this planet. So I just wanted to say thank you, Keith. I'm sorry for all your hardships. And like I said before, about 15 minutes ago, that Mr. McHenry becoming incarcerated for feeding people is definitely a worldwide matter, as I'm sure most most logical adults would agree with that statement. I'm going to say it again because this really happened, and I cannot believe it because it's insane. It's insane that somebody that's feeding people, that's helping people, that wants the world to be a better place for the adults of this world that are now presently adults, and for the kids of this planet that are going to be adults. It's insane that this man would have to spend even one day incarcerated, and this man had to spend a lot of days incarcerated. So being that it's a worldwide matter, we all have to come together to make sure that this does not happen again. Because not only do we discuss these worldwide matters, we come up with solutions for them on this show. And the solution for this worldwide matter is Mr. Keith staying out of going into a cage for feeding people. I mean, you know, we've crossed a lot of lines, you know, and the barriers of our humanity. And that is one line that I cannot myself bear to watch be crossed. Because it's insane. You know, I can't just watch all everybody just go along with that, man. That's crazy that this man would have to go to jail at all. Anyway, we spent a lot of time on this today, Mr. Keith McHenry, and I'm sorry for your hardships, like I said. Thank you very much for your time today.
It was a joy. Thank you. Such good questions.
Absolutely.
I'm really, really psyched to spread this.
Yeah, I'm glad
this.
To find out more knowledge from you and for the world to know about Funa Bombs, because you're actually, you know, a great asset for the last bit of our good humanity that we have on this planet to survive and live on, you know. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today on Love Wins Podcast Show. My name is Nick the Greek. I am your host. We're still here in Santa Cruz, California. Thanks again for joining us today, Mr. Keith. Ladies and gentlemen, please stay tuned for the rest of the show. Love Wins Podcast Show. Nick